It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolor paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over. I'm Jake Litarski alongside Eric Couture. You're out there on Twitter. Give Eric a follow at ETCAT30. You can follow me at JakeSki52. And a quick reminder, if you're listening to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a nice rating or review. It really helps us out and really helps us help you. Any and all feedback is always appreciated. Eric, let's kick things off today with by far the biggest news of the day, and probably I'd say biggest news of the week if it weren't for the Romo injury, but this does have potential to be bigger here, and that is Teddy Bridgewater, Teddy Two Gloves for the Minnesota Vikings here, suffers what appears to be a non-contact knee injury, but they canceled practice. You're seeing teammates cussing and throwing helmets around. Basically, it doesn't look good.
Not at all. Yeah, he was taken to a trauma center. An ambulance actually came to Winter Park in the Minneapolis area to take him to the hospital. Yeah, it doesn't look good at all. Sean Hill's next in line. Yeah. Joel Stave is, was destined for the practice squad, but probably not at this point, unless they make a free agent addition, which it kind of seems likely.
Yeah, before we start to go ahead and rampantly speculate on trades or other ridiculous options, let's just start out by looking internally. You've got Sean Hill, at least he's got some NFL experience. You got Joel Stave on the roster, former Wisconsin Badger. You'll hear me say former Badger great all the time, but I can't in good heart call Joel Stave that.
None of us will ever call him that.
Yeah, I mean, former Wisconsin Badger is about as good as we'll get here. I mean, he was just – the Badgers are always a run-first football team, and to their credit, they can never really recruit quarterbacks to Wisconsin. But Stave was – I mean, especially having to follow up guys like Russell Wilson a few years earlier, Stave was just a little bit indecisive. He had arm strength that he would show in flashes at times, but he would also show flashes of what in the heck is this guy thinking right now when he's throwing the ball. And then, he had that notable case of nobody could really explain it, but I guess he just had the yips is what people will call it, where he couldn't throw the football anymore all of a sudden, and who knows what happened for that season. So, I mean, just after watching him at Wisconsin for a couple years, I'm sure he's a nice enough guy and all, but he's not an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, and you've the guy that was actually battling him the last few years for QB reps in Wisconsin was actually Tanner McAvoy. Mm-hmm. We've seen him have a Hail Mary catch at the end of a preseason game already for Seattle.
Exactly.
But anyway, yeah. Let's do you think Sean Hill or Stave is actually gonna be the main man here right off the bat? See, if it ends up being a serious knee injury,
if there's any offense or any offensive game scheme where a quarterback's probably not necessarily that important, that it would probably be Minnesota, just because we know they're going to give the ball to Adrian Peterson 30
right.
times a game, essentially no matter what the game score is. They don't really have a choice. That's mm-hmm. what they were doing on offense before. Now you start to look at some of the secondary fantasy options on that team. I mean, Stephon Diggs, there's always a little bit of fantasy value around for a team's number one wide receiver, and it looks like it's going to be Stephon Diggs. But anyone who's got Laquon Treadwell shares has got to be a little bit concerned right now. You knew he wasn't going to contribute right off the bat, just being a rookie at all, despite the physical tools. But now there's some questions about if Bridgewater's out for the year and they have just a terrible, inconsistent quarterback situation, that's not going to do Treadwell any fantasy value. And I'm thinking he's almost to the point where that stock will fall enough to keep him out of 12-team drafts.
For sure. So do you think, I guess, Vikings officials, I think his name is Jeff Diamond, the president of operations or whatever, anyway, do you think he's called, say, Denver or Cleveland to see, if Mark Sanchez or Josh McCown is available?
Yeah, well, the last hour in the RotoWire office here has essentially been just a wild game of
speculation.
Let's throw out all the crappy names that the Vikings might be able to consider. And first we'll think about this logically, then we'll go off the rails a little bit before returning. But thinking about this logically, you mentioned, calling Cleveland, RG3 is their starter, but Josh McCown he's a starting NFL quarterback. He has experience. He's not someone you'd think would pencil in to win a couple playoff games, but he's capable enough to keep a team in a game when they're matched up well enough.
Yep.
So McCown's an option, possibly backing up RG3. Of course, Denver, they announced Trevor Siemian as their starting quarterback. So again, you have Mark Sanchez, who skills-wise probably doesn't bring what they were looking for, but at least experience and capability, pretty much an even, if not maybe slightly low war. We always say this in baseball, wins above replacement. These quarterbacks are negative war quarterbacks, essentially. But they're close enough to zero that they're better than other options there. So yeah, there's McCown, there's Sanchez. They might call Brian Hoyer. EJ Manuel is probably one of the better backups in the league, backing up Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo. I don't know how
Geno Smith, maybe in New York.
Geno Smith. So there's actually... there's a decent amount of reasonable backups here.
I mean, I guess even Mike Glennon in Tampa, since they're considering keeping three quarterbacks in Tampa, maybe Mike Glennon might be on the market for them too.
So there's some viable options. Also, don't forget, Colin Kaepernick probably going to be out of a job pretty soon. Zach Mettenberger was released on today, I believe.
Yes,
so,
Tuesday.
Yeah, the Titans made a wave of cuts. We'll get to that a little bit later in the news section. But so those guys, Kaepernick going to be available.
Mettenberger was in San Diego, correct?
Oh, yeah. San Diego. I always think Tennessee.
Yeah, he was with Tennessee previously.
Yeah, thank you for setting the record straight.
No, it's all right.
And then, of course, before we walk in here, you hear people in the office, Brett Favre or Peyton Manning. What about Mike Vick? Is it time for a comeback? My favorite one that I heard is, hey, Dante Culpepper's 39. And
he's not 40 yet?
He's the same. He's the same age as Tom Brady, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, that makes sense.
Josh Freeman. Exactly. He was on an NFL team. He started in week 17 last year.
Oh, I remember that. That was one of the worst showings on national TV that I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
But, I mean, heck yeah, sign Culpepper. Might as well sign Randy Moss, too, and
just
back the clock 10 years. Why not? So, we thought we'd have a little fun with you today before moving on to the rest of the news. Regardless of what the Vikings do, though, I had them pegged as maybe an 8-8, maybe a wild card team. Now I think they're gonna have a real tough time getting to 500.
I mean, I guess I was a lot higher in Minnesota before this injury happened. I was expecting them to kind of challenge the pack with for the division in the NFC North.
I think they, out of all the other NFC North teams, they were the closest threateners of the pack.
Yeah,
but I didn't think that they were going to actually challenge the Packers to the point where they got within a couple games.
Granted, they do have a first place schedule since they did win the division last year.
Yeah.
And Jordy's coming back. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. That puts them behind the eight ball.
Yeah, just a little bit there. And, you know, I have Packer tickets to the Christmas Eve game on the 24th, and that's against the Vikings. And I thought, oh, maybe they'll be playing for some playoff seeding or possibly a division title that
previously,
week.
Yeah.
But I'm not quite thinking that anymore. So I'm curious to see what the over-under win total on the Vikings goes according to Vegas. If only we were out there right now to see that move in action.
Mm-hmm.
But we do got a couple more news items we want to hit on today. One is Devontae Parker. He's day-to-day with a hamstring injury, and that injury forced an early exit from Monday's practice. To nobody's surprise, he's going to sit out Thursday's preseason finale. I mean, hamstring, that's kind of a scary word sometimes. We don't have a ton of details yet, but all of a sudden, I mean, Parker was a pretty trendy sleeper. Is this level of risk making you scale back on him a little bit more, or were you even on him on the first place given his very high price?
That's the thing. Like, yeah, Adam Gase is now in you know, the head coach in Miami. He's produced very effective wideouts in both Chicago and Denver in his last two stops. But I didn't really, I guess, see Devontae Parker having a breakout. But then when you're – the only draft I've had so far was the stake league auction for, you know, RotoWire in office.
Exactly.
And he went for – Devontae Parker went for $24, the same price as Eric Decker and Dante Moncrief. Mm-hmm. I have – by far like those guys much more than, I mean, at least those guys have a track record.
Yeah,
like Devontae Parker hasn't done anything yet.
Yeah. So the thing with Parker, all right, his price has fallen considerably.
Sure.
So
since that point, correct.
Yeah, I mean, since that point, right now we look at Devontae Parker, he's outside of the top 100 overall now, 38 overall among wide receivers. And okay. So his,
that seems more like where he should be.
Right now, he's between Josh Gordon and Stephon Diggs. Gordon's actually jumped up 9 spots in the last 7 days. Devontae Parker's fallen almost 30 spots in the last 7 days. I mean, I think we're going to see a team here with a little bit. I mean, Rashard Matthews is going to be a big part. I'm sorry, I totally screwed that up. Jarvis Landry is going to be a big part of the offense. Kenny Stills has been having a good preseason. They don't have a ton of depth. Yeah, they don't have a ton of depth behind them. Yeah, Carew, Griff Whalen, if you remember him from Indy days. But they've got a pair of pretty solid backs with even Kenyon Drake waiting in the wings. They've got Jordan Cameron if he gets anything back. I mean, there's some weapons there, but Devontae Parker, definitely a player whose stock is on the decline heading into late season drafts here. Another player whose stock is on the decline for a more serious injury related reason, that's Bruce Ellington. He was getting a lot of sleeper hype as a PPR option, thinking, well, the 49ers got to throw the ball to somebody.
Sure.
Who's it going to be? Because Torrey Smith really was the only option ahead of him on the depth chart. But now we've got Bruce Ellington, who's already dealing with a sprained ankle, now has a hamstring injury. The Niners decided to just go ahead and throw him on IR. That makes Torrey Smith and Quentin Patton the next wide receivers in line there. I mean, can you rate your level of fantasy interest on any of these receiving options?
Well, let's note first that when you land on the IR in preseason, it's not the, you know, all for the season IR.
Yep. So an eligible to return, right?
In advance of week one, the 49ers will actually, you know, put him on IR designated to return or the actual IR, meaning he would be out for the season. On the former, though, he's only out until week 10, and then he can actually return to practice in advance of that point. So there's a chance that, you know, there will be some late season viability, but you would, I guess, put him on your watch list and keep an eye on him. I guess when it comes to other wideouts, though, in San Francisco, I mean, Torrey Smith is the known entity, right? Like, you know, he's going to be a deep threat for them, but I mean, are you really interested in either him or Quentin Patton?
Well, the thing is not every quarter or not every team has two fantasy relevant wide receivers.
Sure.
I feel like sometimes people slip into that trap where, like, all right, well, the Falcons got Julio Jones, maybe Aldrick Robinson will sneak up into there or something like that, you know, just kind of an offbeat example. But when Blaine Gabbert's your likely starting quarterback at this point, he seems to be the front runner. When he's your starting quarterback, there's barely fantasy value for one wide receiver, let alone two. So I'm not changing my Quentin Patton status unless I'm in a 16 team league that drafts 20 rounds. And I'm not really Bruce Ellington, if a first-round receiver all of a sudden were to be in the same situation and go on IR, then you might still draft him in your later rounds and just wait 10 weeks, suck it up, and hope you get something from him later on.
Sure.
Bruce Ellington is someone that you got to sniff out on the waiver wire right around week 7, week 8, and then when he comes back, if the 49ers have any shades of halfway decent quarterback play, then maybe he's fantasy viable. But for now, he's someone that if you drafted him in just about any league and you have a fab period picking up, I think it's safe to drop him.
Yeah, and in any case, like, the 49ers are going to be riding Carlos Hyde. Granted, he gets out of the concussion protocol in the near future in week one and
he seems
beyond.
To be making progress. We're not going to talk a ton about that story until we get something more concrete, but he's headed in the right direction.
Yeah, but it, also in San Francisco, Chandron is, you know, waiting in the wings in case Hyde does not play in week one. I mean, that offense is going to be revolving on, around the run game, right?
Yeah, that's got to be the first and foremost, like the biggest priority there. I've been worried about Carlos Hyde potentially being a bust. I know he has the skills, but we've talked about this, and I keep stressing this. Carlos Hyde has got to play the Cardinals twice, the Rams twice, and the Seahawks twice. That's like three of the best, probably three of the top 10 defensive lines in the entire league in that group. So that's just bad for Hyde to start out with. If he gets another concussion, knock on wood here, then he's looking at 3-4 games missed because he already had one in the preseason. There's risk factors around everyone in this 49ers offense. I'm just not ready to pay a premium for any of those pieces.
Yeah, he definitely wouldn't want to have Carlos Hyde as your number one running back, especially with less than 1,000 yards in the ledger as a professional.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of those high upside gamble picks and might help you out in a daily GPP later in the year. But for now, I think he's being drafted a little bit too high. I guess we'll see. Only time will tell if I will get proven wrong here. One other minor running back news bit here also comes from Tennessee, where David Cobb, last year's a fifth-round pick, I believe, he was released by the Titans. He was kind of a surprise cut. We're going to see a lot more of these surprise cuts happening over the next few days here as teams start to trim their roster. But I was scanning over Twitter, and RotoWire's own Derek Van Riper made an excellent point a moment ago. He just tweeted this, where is David Cobb a better running back than anyone on the current Washington Redskins depth chart?
Are we talking about, minus the injured guys? Because I think Matt Jones is definitely better than David Cobb.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like when you're throwing him in the conversation with like Chris Thompson, Keith Marshall, Rob Kelly, who we're going to talk about later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I could easily see that. Like, why don't they take a stab? They have running back issues right now.
Exactly. So, I think that would be a perfect candidate for a potential landing spot for David Cobb. Because I remember at this point last year, we were talking about David Cobb as a potential guy who, if you go zero running backs and spend your last five picks on running back, maybe your last pick or two, David Cobb would be able to do some damage because you had a Titans team that I don't think they had DeMarco. They didn't.
They had Bishop Sankey and Antonio Andrews.
Bishop Sankey was their guy. Yeah, everyone was all over Bishop Sankey in drafts. We saw how well that went.
Yeah.
But so David Cobb, we thought, is a potential sleeper who could work his way up now, and now he's being released, which you got to wonder behind the motives there.
I mean, it was just like the offseason additions of DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry was going to put somebody's job in jeopardy in Tennessee, and I'm not really surprised it's him because Antonio Andrews at least showed effectiveness.
Yeah. I remember we were missing some red zone stats for some of our players, and I was plunking around with a spreadsheet just because our stats feed wasn't complete, and I was looking through Antonio Andrews, some of the game logs where he played.
Yeah.
He played well enough.
Yeah, I mean, he was their leading rusher last year.
At least there's enough of a sample size there to warrant him above in the pecking order. That being said, David Cobb's going to make a roster somewhere. I don't think he'll be delegated to the practice squad wherever he lands up here. Well, that'll do it for today's big news. We want to get started on a little bit of a Dynasty Keeper-type league topic here. We were kind of discussing what topics we wanted to do for the show. And I mentioned, hey, guess what? In this Keeper League, one of the better fantasy football moves I can remember making in recent memory was I got David Johnson for $2 at the end of the auction, thinking, yeah, I mean, I know they have Andre Ellington, and he's getting all the hype this year. I don't know if they had quite signed Chris Johnson at the time of the draft yet. He was
at the time of your draft. Okay.
Yeah, like at the time of last year's draft.
When did you draft, if you recall?
It was like a month before the season, maybe a little less than a month.
He joined around like the 15th or 17th of August last year.
Exactly. So he wasn't quite there yet. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I like David Johnson, just like his skill set, watching him in college, thinking he had the tools to be an NFL running back, but knowing Bruce Arians wouldn't give him the opportunity yet, but there was potential for him to grow into it. So that got us thinking, David Johnson, of course, I got him as a $2 player in auction. Now RotoWire has him valued in a PPR league due to the shallow position. We've got him valued around 57 in a PPR. That's a 12-team, $200 budget. Of course, that changes a lot. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go position by position a little bit. We're not going to get too in-depth with either too many of these guys. I mean, our last show last week, we talked about who to target late if you do a zero running back strategy, and some of these names are repeats. Mm-hmm. But we're going to try to identify, for Keeper Dynasty League specifically, who might I mean, it's going to be near impossible to identify next year's David Johnson, but we're sure as hell going to go ahead and give it a try and try to find a couple $1 or $2 players or late-round draft picks at each position maybe that could be keepable in a dynasty format. Now, the league I kept David Johnson, and I could only keep two keepers, and that's what you would define a keeper format usually, where you only get to keep one, two, maybe three guys. A dynasty format is where you carry over almost your entire roster, so you can keep maybe 8 to 10 guys per year. So that's especially when you're going to be targeting these young players early on, and I think these players will apply to either of them. So let's run down a couple quarterbacks here. I want to start off with, of course, the real obvious one is Dak Prescott. 17 for 23 for 116 yards and a touchdown in his last preseason game against Seattle. We have Tony Romo, you know, potentially he's going to miss through at least week 7, I believe the report was today. Yeah, he's going to be out a while. And The thing with Prescott is you're not going to be able to get him at the price that he was at before, because it was assumed Tony Romo would be the starting quarterback. Now that Romo's about to miss the first 7 weeks of the season here, we have a ascension of Dak Prescott. He all of a sudden is up to 19 overall in ESPN drafts here. His spots jumped almost 50 spots on average here. So he's someone that is all of a sudden going to be taken as a potentially a QB1 or a late sleeper for some teams.
Sure.
But yeah, if you get him for a buck or two, which I don't know if that's possible anymore, but there might be some dynasty value in there, just because how many more years does Romo have? If you're in a dynasty league and can stash a few quarterbacks, I mean, there's a chance Prescott has some long-term value, right?
Yeah, and if you already took him in a dynasty league, I mean, you're going to see immediately like a huge sample size of what he can actually do as a starting quarterback. Mm-hmm. And Dallas is playing a, you know, lesser schedule as well, so I mean, he's actually going to be going against some enticing opponents. He's showing viability as both a passer and a rusher. He has 5 touchdown passes and 2 rushing touchdowns already, averaging 7.5 yards per carry. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
really?
This is good news for Dak Prescott.
I mean, you're gonna see like a nice, I think, balanced attack in Dallas.
Yeah, if you took Prescott in the really early part, or I'm sorry, the late part of the draft, mm-hmm. and you, I would almost be comfortable trading away your Drew Brees or your Lux to see if you can get a big return.
Sure.
And then just trying to roll the dice on Prescott.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just a few preseason games, but he's demonstrated the tools, and he certainly has the weapons.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about that here. Another $1 quarterback that is still probably hardly going to be taken in 12-teamers, that's Trevor Siemian, a young guy out of Northwestern. We know he's smart, at least we'll give him that, from Northwestern. And so
he has to be, right?
Yeah, he has to be. So he's going to learn the game very well. I can imagine some sort of, almost, I don't want to say Peyton Manning, but a very, when I think of dedication to film and understanding the game, I think of Peyton Manning. And we saw John Elway and Peyton Manning do this in Denver. I think Siemian probably has a good idea of how to do things, quote unquote, the right way.
And
he develop?
And he did have 1 year working under Peyton Manning. He was basically the scout team quarterback last year with, you know, Manning and Osweiler as the 1 and 2. He's not going to make mistakes, even though he has thrown 2 interceptions in the preseason. That's the reason he got this job, is because Gary Kubiak, the coach, trusts him to actually make no mistakes. But when it comes to fantasy value, I'm not totally interested. Like, I mean, does that, like, not Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders down in your mind? Like,
maybe Sanders a little bit. I don't think it knocks Thomas down, because he's almost like DeAndre Hopkins.
You're right.
Quarterback proof. I'll give Thomas the pass on that. I think that's actually knocked Thomas's value down enough to make me want to consider drafting him at the price where he's at.
Yeah, and he did get to work with Tim Tebow for a season back in the day, so yeah. And he still put up a decent stat line.
Never forget trying out for baseball teams today, Tim Tebow here. Yep. But verdict on Siemian, he's going to be a starter. Maybe there's some viability in 2 quarterback leagues, but just based on his skill set and the Broncos game plan for him, not a whole lot of fantasy value to be found there. The one Denver player that I think will have some long-term dynasty value, who I was upset because I lost out on, I spent my last $2 on him. I put him up for $2 at auction. Someone decided, oh, he's bidding on him, so I'm going to give him a shot too and swipe him for $3. Anyway, that's Devontae Booker, man, of the Broncos. Now, preseason's been a little hit or miss. Under 3 yards a carry, that's not necessarily what you want to see. But I personally think Devontae Booker has the build and the long-term skills to be a productive running back in this league for a couple of seasons. Are you with me?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And when it comes to the Denver running back situation, it always seemingly is the, you know, guy that's second in the pecking order that actually ends up having the best fantasy season. Mm-hmm. Ronnie Hillman entered last year as the number one CJ Anderson ended up being the number one eventually, and actually being by far the best running back, you know, basically fueling their title run along with the defense in Denver.
He had a slow start, but he eventually came on.
But when it comes to Booker, yeah, like throw the dart and see if it works out.
Yeah, but the way this offense is run here, they're two running backs are going to get carries. We saw some series with Anderson, some series with Hillman last year. Mm-hmm. So we say Devontae Booker gets his chance, and what if he excels? Then all of a sudden you have a solid running back. I think mm-hmm. Devontae Booker might be one of the closest players to having that David Johnson potential. You know, I said we're trying to find the David Johnson. What if Devontae Booker is able to separate himself and get that job in a team that's defensive-based, so they're going to be run first with a young and inexperienced quarterback, even more incentive to be run first. And CJ Anderson, he's been good over the past few seasons. He's had shades of excellent fantasy value. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's the second-round pick that he's being drafted at right now, but there is some utility there. But if Booker can eventually set himself apart or there is any sort of injury, all of a sudden Booker could finish the season. His last six games or so could be amazing. And if you get him for $2, $3, $4 at auction, and he's a perfect dynasty keeper.
And exactly. Dynasty keeper. That's the thing. If you spend, you know, $2 or $3 in, say, a 12 or 14 team league right now, I mean, you might be tempted to, you know, cut loose and, you know, pick up somebody, say, in week three when it's, or week four when, you know, bye weeks ramp up and you need to actually make a roster move.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be patient in those type of leagues, have some deep rosters there.
I definitely had David Johnson last year, you know, in certain leagues and ended up dropping him because I just had to make the moves. I only had five bench spots.
And then
you know, week 11 rolls around and both Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington get injured. And now he's number one.
Mm-hmm. And he tore the Packers up pretty bad in their regular season whopping last year.
Yep.
The regular season matchup wasn't nearly as close to the playoff one, but another running back that I seem to be liking a lot, or I'm warming up to a lot, is DeAndre Washington from the Raiders. A young guy currently sits behind Latavius Murray on the depth chart, of course, and that's understandable. Of course, Murray getting a lot of second and third round love in fantasy drafts this year, but you got rookie DeAndre Washington. He's 23, carried the ball 8 times for 55 yards, and then also caught a 6-yard touchdown pass. Then again, lost a fumble that was returned to a touchdown. You know, just when you think you're building momentum, something like that happens. That being said, it's not just because maybe I question Latavius Murray here and there where he's being drafted, but DeAndre Washington, he's 5'8", 204, so kind of a smaller guy out of Texas Tech. There's still some potential there, right, for Dynasty? He's someone that you might actually be able to get away with purchasing for a buck.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that assessment. I just think Latavius Murray is basically going to have to underperform or suffer an injury for him to actually, mm-hmm. you know, land that number one job. I think Murray is clear-cut number one, of course.
Yeah,
but,
no
yeah, like, why not take the stab and mm-hmm. see if it works out?
Yeah, that's what it's all about. I mean, with these type of late-round players here.
You can't really deny, like, 5 yards per carry in preseason. If you look back in the past, you know, usually the top 5 or 10 actually in preseason stats at the end of the preseason, those guys actually end up coming to the top and making an appearance. Thomas Rawls comes to mind from last season. Exactly. Like, he was a top 5 running back last year in the preseason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see another guy get there in a little bit, hopefully. But first, mm-hmm. nobody ever gets in their car thinking, I'm drunk, I'm driving, and I might take a life tonight. They might think, I've had a few drinks, but I'm okay, or I only live a few minutes from here, that's fine, or I've gotten away with this loads of times before. They think that right up until the moment that they take a life. Thousands of people are killed in drunk driving crashes every year. It's better to be safe than sorry. To help you do that, you can download the free Safe Ride app to help you call a taxi or send a friend your location when you've been drinking. Remember to drive sober or get pulled over. Eric, now it's time for our Safe Sleepers pick, sponsored by Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over. Many of us, like myself, will be downing some beers at our fantasy drafts, which leads to bad decisions in the later rounds or worse decisions getting behind the wheel after the draft. So that leads us in to today's Safe Sleeper pick, and that is Rob Kelly of the Washington Redskins. You want to kind of explain the Keith Marshall situation first and why he might be a sleeper pick for the for late drafts?
Well, yeah. So Keith Marshall actually has already landed on IR. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's, you know, out for the season. It's just that his elbow injury is serious enough that the Redskins do not believe that he's going to be, you know, available for many weeks. Mm-hmm. With Matt Jones also tending to a second-degree AC joint sprain, and then also Chris Thompson dealing with knee and shoulder injuries, mm-hmm. there's an opportunity that the number one job in Washington will actually be available in week one. And The guy who's actually impressed in the preseason is Rob Kelly.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Now, Matt Jones' health is a factor. Chris Thompson, even if healthy, I've always thought of him as more of a third-round back. I got some shares of him in some drafts just because I didn't know who the heck Rob Kelly or Keith Marshall were at the time, and I just kind of getting the next guy, and they were PPR format, so I figured third down we'll get something there. So Chris Thompson was there. But as far as first and second down running backs, yeah, Rob Kelly is a chance to get you. I think Rob Kelly is a good player if you get Le'Veon Bell, for example, and mm-hmm. need a fill-in for weeks 1 through 3 while Le'Veon sure. Bell is suspended. I think you could pick Rob Kelly up there, and by the time that's all said and done, you might be able to just go ahead. You go ahead and release him because Le'Veon Bell's coming back in your lineup, and then by then, I mean, Matt Jones might be healthy, so the utility of Kelly might be gone. But a early season fill-in, I think you could do a lot worse than a guy like Kelly.
Yeah, and Kelly's more so going to be a rusher than a pass catcher. He mm-hmm. so far in the preseason, 22 carries, 99 yards, 4.5 yards per carry, 1 touchdown. Only 3 receptions, which, you know, in a small sample size means that he might be a, somewhat of a viable pass catcher. But I think if Chris Thompson is healthy in week one, he'll have that role. Mm-hmm. Rob Kelly will then be the number one back.
Yeah, I hear you right there. Sticking with Washington, though, kind of as we start to switch this conversation to receivers. Sure. First off, I mean, everyone knows about Corey Coleman. He's kind of a $9-$10 player in a $200 budget. Tajay Sharp, he's picked up enough momentum that he hardly fits into this discussion anymore. He's going right. to be the number two wide receiver. And being, you know, as young as he is, he's always a dynasty candidate. But one other guy I want to talk about from Washington is Josh Doctson. He was one of the first receivers taken in the draft out of TCU, but he's getting overlooked a lot because they've got DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon on that team, not to mention a guy like Jordan Cameron at the tight end position here. So an offense loaded with weapons. I like Josh Doctson, not someone as I can draft this year and depend on, but someone who I can keep on my roster in a dynasty format for a low price and watch as he finally starts to carve out a more prominent role over the likes of Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson, two players that maybe are getting a little bit older and the speed might not be quite what it once was.
Yeah, indeed. It just kind of sucks, for lack of a better term, that he hasn't actually been able to perform in the preseason so far since he's dealing with that Achilles injury and resides in the PUP list.
Remember who else wasn't able to perform in the preseason during his rookie year?
Odell Beckham?
Due to a hamstring injury. Yeah, right, exactly on the same page there. Because that's how that works, right?
Right.
But no, a player that we definitely want to consider, another guy like that who I do have some shares of, is Tyler Boyd, who's sure. actually gotten some action in the preseason.
And he's been incredibly impressive, you know, mm-hmm. getting those sideline catches. He hasn't actually been as explosive as I thought he would be, but, mm-hmm. you know, maybe
he's a guy that's going to move the chains for Cincinnati.
Sure.
So
exactly.
if A.J. Green finds himself in a tough spot at any point, which, I mean, we almost thought he did for a second after he banged knees with, I forget who it was.
One of the Jacksonville D-backs.
Yeah, I think it was Devon House, actually. It was a former Packer. That's why I was going to say it's on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, but yeah, they banged knees, but he's fine.
You're right. Like, and A.J. Green's going to be drawing all that attention. So mm-hmm. somebody's actually, and with Tyler Eifert out for the first 3 weeks of the season, Tyler Kroft also dealing with a knee injury.
Yeah, someone's got to catch the passes.
Exactly.
And I think that could be
outside of Giovanni Bernard, of course.
Early in the season, I was willing to pay up to $4 for Tyler Boyd at auction, or $2 in a $100 budget. Mm-hmm. I think that holds firm still for me. I thought I overpaid a little bit because I snatched him from a couple guys who are also bidding, but I think he's a good pick. And, I mean, anything $5 or under is a very good keeper price
Indeed.
For Boyd. What about Houston, though? We have this conversation where not all football teams have a wide receiver too that's fantasy relevant, and we all know about DeAndre Hopkins and how he's quarterback proof and how he's going to be the number one guy there. But then you've got a real speedy Will Fuller behind him on the depth chart, followed by Braxton Miller. Are either of these guys $1 flyers for you?
I would say, with how impressive Will Fuller was on Sunday against Arizona, I would say I would take a flyer on him for sure.
Yeah,
Braxton Miller. I think when it comes to Braxton Miller, though, he hasn't played the position long enough. I think it's going to take a bit longer for him to actually be effective.
Yeah, maybe he'll eventually get into Terrell Pryor territory this season here. Another guy I want to mention, Philip Dorsett. Now, he's someone who's young, still developing, and is also blocked on the depth chart by T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief, which is why I think he fits into this discussion perfectly. I took him. He was a player, you know, that same league that I got David Johnson for $2 in. I paid $2 for Philip Dorsett this year. Nice. And chances are I won't be keeping him next year because I'll be able to keep Johnson for another year at $2. The price doesn't go up, which I think is awesome.
And is it a one-keeper league? You only get one keeper?
Two keepers. I'll probably continue to keep Odell Beckham at $52.
Nice. Because
with inflation accounted for, I think Beckham would go for more than 52 in auction. So Beckham and Johnson are keepers locked in there. Unless something were to happen to Beckham here, I'm knocking on wood.
Yeah.
But Dorsett for $2, I think that would at least – he would be someone I could trade to a team who needs a good keeper for next year that could give me some pieces that might help me win the league this year.
So yeah, that's kind of
my mindset.
Yeah, and especially with Andrew Luck back and the fact that they're going to run three wide sets on most downs makes me like him even more.
Yeah, exactly. And the other one other receiver I want to bring up who I think is can be bought at a really cheap price quick. The question since he entered the league has always been his health, but I think once he's healthy, he could be a decent force in PPR formats, and that's Marquise Lee, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, those guys get all the hype, and rightfully so, but I think if we get a healthy Lee that can work his way into the screen game, there's some PPR potential there, and I'm starting to see him maybe gain a little bit of steam as a late-round option, especially as he starts to get more practice time under his belt.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was pretty high on Allen Hurns coming into the season, but now that I think about it a little bit, like, was that a little fool's gold last year? Do you think he's actually going to be, you know, a 1,000-yard receiver with 10 touchdowns again?
He could be a 1,000-yard receiver. I just don't think the 10 touchdowns are going to happen, especially with Julius Thomas maybe getting healthier
and
other
sure.
options there. So a 1,000-yard receiver is a lot more likely than 10 touchdowns.
Yeah, and Lee's actually looked fairly good in the preseason as well. Mm-hmm. Finally that he's healthy.
Yeah. All right, two young tight ends I want to talk about. Only one rookie really stands out to me. That's Tyler Higbee of the Rams. Lance Kendricks is number one on the depth chart based on experience, but very rarely you're going to find dollar tight ends, and even in dynasty leagues, it's a little risky to go after them. But, I mean, does someone like Higbee have a chance to – probably not this season. I'm not really looking for it this season, especially with the quarterback situation that'll eventually switch to Jared Goff, but he's maybe someone you want to consider. The other guy I like even more – Austin Seferian Jenkins. I feel like people are forgetting about him. He was healthy last year for the first week, had a huge week one. I threw out a ton of fab money on him, and then he got hurt again. But I think with Jameis Winston coming forward and other weapons on that offense to distract attention from him, I think Seferian Jenkins could be a steal if you get him in the later rounds of drafts.
Yeah, and ever since he got kicked out of practice in June, you know, did you hear about that in OTAs? He got kicked out of a practice.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
And then ever since that point, Cameron Brate has been the listed number one tight end in Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. Ever since that point, Seferian Jenkins has actually been like a model citizen and working his butt off to actually get back to the, you know, presumed role, the role that we expect him to have as the starter. Another year with or a second year with Jameis Winston for sure.
Exactly.
Who does he have to throw to aside from, you know, Mike Evans and Charles Sims?
Mm-hmm. I guess there's some Vincent Jackson.
I know there's Vincent Jackson there, but I'm just thinking about the age, you know, 34, 35 at this point.
Yeah, well, Seferian Jenkins, 23, so he's a perfect keeper candidate. 6'5", 260, he can get down the field. We saw it last year, so that's something else that you want to consider. Well, hey, that's going to wrap things up for today's episode of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, sponsored by Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over. Once again, I'm Jake Litarski. You can find me on Twitter at JakeSki52.
And over here, I'm Eric Aturi, and you can find me on Twitter at ETCat30.
The RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast will return Wednesday with college football gurus John McKechnie and Mario Puig.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers. The trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at BIOPTIMIZERS.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.